从来矛盾
听到了这个。I think we had a pretty elaborate discussion on even the evaluation section and what graphs to put in there. Do you have all of those written down somewhere?
Yeah, that's another. There's no write up there, just some
right
placeholder what to do.
I think it would be good for us to have access to those plots. And even if they're, you know, just brief descriptions
what
in the caption.
What I'm thinking is that write the previous study,
mm-hmm,
an introduction,
mm-hmm,
in a nice way, and a previous study, and those placeholders in a...
What do you mean previous study?
I'm sorry, the related work.
Mm-hmm.
So do it quickly so that you can have a better idea of the structure of the paper.
What you're trying to achieve? Do you remind me of that one? I know that we're trying
Hello?
To...
Hello.
Hi, Ajay.
This is Ajay.
Yes, hi.
Can you hear me well?
Yeah. We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yeah, it seems like you're sitting away from the phone, but it's okay.
Let me bring the phone closer to where everyone is. Okay. Okay, so we just started discussion, and Sajib was reminding us that we designed some experiments for the dynamic resource allocation algorithm and evaluating it. And so he has some notes on what those plots are going to look like, what are the variables involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe we could talk about this paper in general, and then we could talk about those few experiments that we had discussed.
So, to give an overview, the idea of the paper is to propose a solution to make dynamic resource allocation. So, dynamic resource allocation resource in all diamond dimensions, like CPU, memory, and IO capacity, across some running virtual machines, running some applications, and each have its own service level agreement. And the job of the dynamic resource allocation is to partition the resources according to the service level agreement. So overall the idea is to maximize the revenue generated across all the virtual machines for our data center. So that's the overall idea. And about the workshop version, with that idea we developed an algorithm, a greedy algorithm, which will do that job.
So, you know, problem statement, where does the dynamism come from? Which aspect is dynamic?
Is that we are doing it at a certain time interval. We are reconfiguring it. So let's say at a specific time interval, let's say at now, we did some reconfiguration based on the...
Why do we need to do reconfiguration? What makes it necessary? Is the application dynamic? Are the workloads dynamic? Are the SARs dynamic?
No, I don't think it's dynamic. I think the workload is dynamic.
The workload would be dynamic, in which case we would need a model that's
right,
changing,
right,
and we don't have that yet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go back to our discussions we had on how to evaluate something like this, we had something which was very simple and maybe not very practical, so we could talk about that eventually, but we are talking about a model that's static here. But let's say that you have a static model for a bunch of different applications.
Okay. Why call it static model? Because if you have the NN model, you can give a particular, you know that to get a particular response time and throughput,
mm-hmm,
what is the parameter in each case?
I think I have the answer. The dynamism comes because thing is that we cannot do reconfiguration at a complete reconfiguration at a particular interval because of the inability of the model to capture the I/O contention.
So see, the question: why do you have to do reconfiguration if everything is static?
Um,
The only thing requirements are when the workload is very good.
I think that's a very good point. So the word dynamic is probably not appropriate in the title. If you take out the word dynamic, then would better reflect what we are doing. Because can you describe the experiment that we had designed and the plot that we had originally devised? Given that we do not have a model, we have a model that's static, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do we demonstrate the utility of that model for making good resource allocation decisions?
Which part of the model is still interesting conclusion?
What part of the model is static?
Yeah.
I know
it's static because we discussed that, but I'm completely missing that.
Because the load is not changing. So the only thing that we, so given a specific load that doesn't change, how we construct the model is that we allocate different amount of resources and see the response to that load, right? And then we have a model that describes the response for the entire parameter space of allocation. But in a realistic environment, even the load will change. And when the load changes, your model must change.
Can I mention something?
Mm-hmm.
So the way I see it is that if the total demand in the system that all the VMs have is less than the capacity that you have in the cloud, then everybody should be able to get what they are asking for. The point where the modeling and setting configuration based on the model would be useful is only when the sum of demand is greater than the capacity. Is that correct?
I see it in a slightly different way, Ajay. Even if, let's say that the amount of resources that you need is more than the amount of resources that is necessary, even to make that determination, you need to determine how much resources are necessary, right? To meet a specific SLA goal, right? And that's where the model comes in. The model says that if you want to meet this, let's say this response time or this throughput goal, then you have to allocate a certain amount of resources in the presence of a certain amount of contention, right? So even the question of whether the amount of resources is sufficient for meeting a certain set of SLA goals for a certain set of VMs is not trivial. And second, even if you were to able to answer that question, you still have the problem of how much resources allocate to each VM, right?
So there are two things here. One is the VM sizing aspect that you are saying. You are saying that in order to meet something, what should be the size of the VM? But just the particular sizing is something that I think we have sort of covered in the previous paper. Second thing comes that you did some sizing based on your static model and based on the response time requirement. But that sizing is not turning out to be enough. And the reason could either be that the contention has changed, which only would be in the case of I/O, because for CPU and memory, you would reserve the full requirement. And if that's the case, I mean, another assumption or another possibility is that the application workload has changed and now the sizing is not good enough. In that case, you should be creating a newer model and then fixing the problem.
Could you repeat the last part, please?
So the last part is that why would the size need to change?
Right.
Either because the contention has changed and now you need to resize the VM. You need to give it more resources to make up. For example, if the I/O latency contention has increased,
right,
then you may want to give more memory to get to the same performance.
Correct.
Or the application workload has changed. For example, earlier it was doing transactions that were requiring 8K reads. But now the transaction type has changed. People are buying something else and not the previous thing. And now because the transaction type has changed, the overall workload requires more or less resources to get the same response time.
Right, right.
There is another reason why the sizing decoder need to be changed is when you need to add another VM or another application into the same hardware into the same hardware resources that you have.
But that makes this assumption that the total capacity or the total hardware resources you have is less than the total demand, and that's where I started with.
Not necessarily, because it may happen that it's not that if you have enough resources, you just use it. Because if you use the way to look at the IT operations is to if you use the resources that is only required to meet the SLA, then that will free up some of the other hardware resources that can be used to support more applications. So, for example, if you have four computers and if you're running three applications, and you say, okay, I can run three applications, four computers, so I'm happy to go. I would say, no, that's the wrong assumption. You have to say, look at the three applications and look at the three SLA and see how much computer, what is the hardware resource you need. If you need one computer, just get one computer and free up the other three computers early.
True. So, I'm assuming that you have already done that. That is, again, that you did some VM sizing. So, when the VM came in, you figured out what it means based on the static model, and now when the fourth VM or the new VM comes in, you know what is allocated and you know what is total capacity. The free amount is known.
Yeah, what may be needed if another two or three, say you're running 10 applications, if another 10 more applications comes up, then at some point you have probably added the 10 applications within the four computers, just assuming that you have enough resources. But at some point, you may need to reconfigure the resources for all these 20 applications so that you come up to the come across in an optimal scenario.
True. See, but again, in that case, you did make the assumption that the total resources are limited as compared to the total needs.
Not limited.
Because if the resources is more than what is needed, then you don't have to do any reconfiguration.
So, Ajay, let me jump in here. There is, I think there are two different ways of looking at the problem. One is that there is a fixed QoS or SLA goal that we need to meet.
Okay.
And as long as we meet that goal, that's enough. And if we don't meet that goal, there is a problem, right? And the way we are formulating the SLA in this work, or at least thinking of it so far, is that it's more of a continuous curve where given a certain amount of performance, or by delivering a certain amount of performance, your client is going to pay you a certain amount of money, right? So it's a revenue-based system. Where there is no single performance goal, right? So, there are many different kinds of SLA models. I agree. Maybe this model is not as realistic, but I'm not so much out in the field to evaluate which models are more real than other models. And if we need to also consider other models, we probably should. I mean, maybe there is a model where there's a fixed goal that needs to be met, and anything below that is unacceptable or will incur severe penalty, right?
But I remember talking with some of the people in Ajay's company in VMware, but they say that there is no fixed model in SLA. People use different modeling. So there is no like standard SLA model you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some recent papers, I don't remember the name, but they introduced that concept to like multi-level service level agreement, where you have the minimum service level agreement you have to achieve, plus there are revenue-based, incentive-based, extra level you can think of what we are achieving to.
SLA nowadays is a multi-level thing, and going back to the same thing that was like VM configuration is done. So, for example, probably every month once. Right now I have about 5 VMs on the Rackspace, really. And every month they send a, I get an email that, okay, give me a time when I can shut down the VM so that I can reconfigure the VM, so that I can resize the whole thing, resize my data center.
Mm-hmm.
So I get that thing, really. So I don't know why they're doing that, but my anticipation is that probably they're getting more requests of the PM, more requests of the applications, and that's why they want to look at the configuration again and consolidate the whole thing early.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whenever the consolidation comes up, we need some algorithm. Normally, people do just randomly, and that's what we're talking about, I believe. Well, at least that is the problem I have in my mind.
You're saying that the Rackspace would be configuring user VMs? Reconfiguring them, or
Rackspace does a couple of things. Rackspace, say for example, if I'm running the applications and they are running the application without letting me know how much VM that are running, they can say that okay, I want to reposition your application, so I need a shutdown time. That's also they do. And in some other situation, when I'm buying some VM early, Then I have the hardware, I have the memory and CPU, where all these things are specified, but I don't know which hardware they're running. So they also reconfigure on those things, like which hardware it is running, really. Not reconfigure, reposition, reallocate the hardware.
Yeah, but I think that is just that they might be migrating your VM from one place to another to handle some hardware issues at their level. They're not asking user to do anything to the VM in terms of...
I'm not saying they're asking user to do it, but they let the user know that they will do that, because there will be some 5 minutes or 6 minutes or 10 minutes shutting down of time early.
True, but that seems like a hardware issue, that they don't have the technology to live migrate VMs or handle things without actually any intervention to the user.
Maybe, but I think that it's also the issue of the allocation early. They allocate some VMs in the four computer, and maybe some more VM comes up, so they need to reallocate. Maybe that's also the issue.
I think what I'm hearing is that there are multiple scenarios.
Hmm? We need to discuss the scenario.
We have to list all the possible scenarios and see in which scenarios this kind of work is going to apply.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So,
Rajan, just for a second. The thing that you mentioned earlier about multi-level SLAs, or there is no just one value, but it's a continuous curve. I understand that particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there again, I just want to mention, in that case, we are making the assumption that whatever is the highest level of SLA user is asking for, what is the highest level of demand that user is asking for, that cannot be met for all users, but a part of that can be met, and we want to figure out who should get what part based on the revenue.
Right. That's the goal. But I'm not saying that it cannot be met at all, right? It possibly could be met if there are not enough contention or whatever it is, right? Or there are too much hardware resources, over-provisioning. But it's also possible that the highest level of SLAs cannot be met in some situations. And whether that's the common case or not, I don't know. But it's a case that I'm hoping that it's a real case, right? And that's why this work would make sense, that, you know, understanding how much resources applications need, so that you don't have to over-provision your systems, and if you don't have enough resources or you don't have enough capital to buy all the resources that you need, then you have to still find a way to maximize your revenue, and that's where our work can possibly help.
I feel we need to imagine all these different scenarios from the development direction to motivate why we need to do reconfiguration, right? And what is the granularity of the reconfiguration?
The one thing which I had to say is that, I mean, if we have a static model, there is some reconfiguration involved if we add a new VM. But if we, let's say even at the more simple problem of, let's say, finding out how much resources to allocate for a given static set of VMs, right, to maximize revenue. Even that question we found had like a lot of complexity involved, right? And we designed this algorithm which runs into two or three pages.
Like if I give you 10 applications, and if I tell you this is the performance, then allocate me 10 applications. How do you do that? You just random.
Right. So, I think the part about the sizing that Ajay was talking about is, if we have a model, let's say, that says given a certain amount of resources and given a certain amount of IO contention, the application can get a certain amount of performance, right?
Yes.
No,
Ajay has a point. His assumption is that either the resources there are sufficient resources, or there is no value in or not value, but there is also the advantage of freeing up the existing resources early, even if there is sufficient resources early.
Right. Yeah, because in these cloud data centers that we are talking about, demand keeps changing and possibly increasing.
The applications are continuously being added. Applications are not being decreased. The number of applications are continuously being added. So in that scenario, at some point you have to say, no, I will not add more hardware. Let me use some whatever resources I have to efficiently, so that I can support all the existing applications.
Yeah, and supporting might mean that supporting at a level that was lower than before, but that lower level still generates some revenue.
Some revenue, yes.
Right. So Ajay, your thoughts?
No, I mean, I think the reason for me asking these questions is to just clarify what situations we think we are making a contribution in.
Absolutely.
And what situations we don't need to make any changes.
Yes. Basically, the scenario description need to wait here.
Right, and there might be, I would like to have like multiple scenarios and also state and which scenarios, you know, you don't need this kind of capability. I think that would be important. So Sajeev, I think as one of your next tasks, you should think about all the possible scenarios, that including the ones that we discussed and maybe things that we didn't discuss, come up with a list and brief descriptions of each, and also include in each of those scenarios whether this new paper is going to be applicable, and if yes, how, and if not, why.
Okay.
Right. So I think we should go through that exercise within the next few days, so that all of us are on the same page.
So what are we solving?
Yeah, what are we solving, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, but yes. The way I see it is that in a cloud case, people would be buying VMs with certain reservations. Now, the reservation is something that a customer is paying upfront for, and the cloud providers are going to reserve those resources, so that's fully sort of accounted for. Now, the sum of reservation is going to be smaller than the overall capacity. So if you have a capacity of 100 GHz, you might have a reservation of 40 overall. Now there is remaining 60 gigahertz that needs to be allocated.
Right. So Ajay, here, just to clarify, you're talking about infrastructure as a service model, right? When you're saying that clients buy a certain amount of resources and so on. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that's another point which I'd like for us to clarify, which is what kind of model are we talking about? Are we talking about this model being applicable to all? No, I think there was infrastructure, then platform, and then application. No. Application as a service? No. What was that?
Software as a service.
Right. So I think we should talk about these models, these three models, as well as, and there might be scenarios that fit into each of these models, and where our work might be applicable. So it would be nice to maybe even have some kind of a table that explores all of these combinations and shows, you know, in which cases this kind of resource allocation technique to maximize revenue can actually help.
But we are not doing for infrastructure as a service, because we are not considering as a scenario where customers will say, okay, I need a VM with this kind of configuration. I think we're talking about a scenario where I give the application to the service provider, so you run the application.
Maybe platform or even
the way I interpret the infrastructure as a service is I want to buy the infrastructure that I need, but not necessarily I won't necessarily specify how many CPU cycles and how much memory. What I'm really concerned is the kind of system environment that I need to run my application.
Okay.
And so in that sense, our work can still help the customer decide what is the amount of resource that you need to buy from.
Who decides to decide
how much memory and how much CPU I will...
The data center provider can still, the cloud provider can still decide that.
I think it's possible, and in fact, this reminds me a few days back, I was, because this three things, software as a service, platform, and infrastructure as a service, people interpret these in slightly different ways, right? And there was this definition that Rich Wolski, you might know him, right? He's the eucalyptus guy. So he said, this is my definition of software as a service and so on. So he said that, if you upload only your data, then it's software as a service. If you upload your data and and finally, when he said infrastructure as a service, he said if you upload your data and code, then you're using infrastructure as a service.
Yeah, can I just mention a little bit more on that?
Yeah.
So I think if you just put your data, that is software as a service, because you don't provide the software is provided by the vendor.
Right, right.
If you put your data and if you put your application code with it,
right, right,
that is platform as a service. For example, if you go to Google Apps Engine,
yeah,
they allow you to write some software code and put it on the Google Cloud. And you put the software application and the
and
data.
Code, right,
if
right.
you put the application, OS, and data,
right,
then you have infrastructure as a service because you are putting all three of them.
Right. So, yeah, I think what he said was if you upload data, code, and configuration.
Mm.
And by configuration, I guess he meant the OS.
Mm.
I see.
Then
okay.
It's infrastructure as a service.
It goes with your comment
because you're not specifying that the client is buying a certain amount of cycles or memory and so on, right? And that may be very well be the case. And,
but what is the configuration then?
Configuration is the OS.
But if OS configuration is the application cycle, memory, and all those things.
Amounts of CPU and memory.
So, the way I see it is we are only targeting infrastructure as a service because the other two models, they may not even have any VM concept.
Mm.
For example, Salesforce runs software as a service where they have a database and they have technology to partition it into multiple databases and run the CRM software for different vendors. Now, that's a different level of virtualization. There are no VMs involved.
Hmm.
Well, some do, right? I think some of those software as a service or platform as a service, they do use virtual machines.
And that would make sense because, clients may not care whether they are running the OS or not, but they may care about security and isolation. So they might want to know that their application is actually running inside a VM, although they don't want to configure the VMs themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only thing is that in that case, I don't know what examples would we give. Are there existing SaaS vendors who use VMs to do SaaS? And same thing for platform as a service, Google and Yahoo and many of these vendors, they make you write the code in some modified version of Python, which has some subset of SQL queries. And once you upload that code, they can run it on 10,000 machines. And they are not using VMs either.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a little bit about Windows Azure. I have this impression that they use the hypervisor in background. So Azure is a platform as a service. So I can look into that.
I see. Okay.
Microsoft Azure, you are saying.
But I think this is a good starting point for us to even, for us to get better understanding of what exactly is the extent of our contribution. Right?
And also we need to, apart from the IAS or PAS, we need to bring into the concept of, remember the renting chart we saw in one of the papers? How the rents are being applied.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So what's that paper?
That paper was from Microsoft, I think.
Right.
I think Eurosys. So they
plotted four scenarios.
Right.
I mean, what kind of, even in cloud environment, what is the metric of charging?
Yeah, it had a nice name too, that paper.
Yeah, it doesn't
remember. Can share that with that?
Yeah, I think you also read the paper. I just can't remember the name.
Okay.
Yeah, in that there were different
charging models.
Q-Cloud.
Q-Cloud.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah, so yeah, certainly we should, you know, look at that paper and as you're building the scenarios and maybe the table of which scenarios apply in which, for which model, right? Which of these models? Maybe some scenarios apply for multiple models. And in the case of infrastructure as a service, Ajay, you think, I mean, you still think that what we are talking about here still applies in the infrastructure as a service model?
So I think it applies in specific scenarios. And I think we need to write down those scenarios and say, are these the only scenarios? And if those are the ones, is it enough? Or is the assumption that we are making for those scenarios valid?
Right.
Because I think the thing that I'm trying to avoid is that if we start with some assumption without stating it explicitly, then we don't know. We might have solved the problem that happened in 0.01% of the time. Whereas right now we have the time to modify the problem definition if needed or to adjust things so that we are trying to solve something which is more prominent.
I think we really have to, you know, pin down exactly the scenarios and the models and
the scope of our work.
Yeah, and that would help to identify the scope of this work. So I was actually thinking in a completely opposite way to what you're saying. I think what you're saying is that if you're doing infrastructure as a service, assuming that the SLAs are specified using application level metrics, then our work would be applicable. When there is no guarantee on the amount of resources that are provided to clients, but there is some SLA involved at the application level, right?
Yeah, when the total resources that you have are not enough to provide everybody what they need.
Right, right. But infrastructure as a service, at least in my mind, until now, I was thinking that when you ask for a service, you actually get a certain amount of CPU cycles and memory and maybe disk bandwidth or something like that. But
that's the way I looked at it also. So.
Yeah, that's the way I always perceive it. But apparently, that's not the only way.
Right. I think the Q-Cloud is actually very good at discussion on this. That's a charging model. That's not tied to the cloud model.
Mm-hmm.
So there are different ways you can charge. You can charge by the amount of resources you rent, or we can charge by the kind of performance I give you. And the reason why it's more is that cannot deliver that here.
But doesn't that fall into a software as a service?
No, the charging model has nothing to do with the user has to provide. Remember, the user only provides data, and the user is going to use your software. In terms of charging, I mean, I can still say
to two different dimensions.
Yeah, to two different dimensions. Even if that, I can still charge by resources you use. Right?
Okay.
Okay, I don't have charge by performance I give you, and I don't think anybody can do that yet, even for science.
So I think that would be a good discussion to have.
It's two different dimensions. We're previously merging the two. It's the same thing about two different dimensions.
Yeah, I think more clear now.
Very good point. There's two different dimensions.
I completely agree with, I think Ming was talking, right?
Yeah.
I completely agree with Ming. I think it's basically currently they charge you for the size because that's the easy way to charge. But almost everyone wants to go to SLA-based charging, and that is something if our work can enable, that's a big contribution.
Yeah. Okay, and so...
And that may be the starting point of the motivation of the purpose.
Right. I think that would be a very good introduction to the work.
And we even mentioned it in the previous paper's introduction. I don't know if people remember it. But in previous paper introduction, we did say that people are charging based on the sizing and everything.
Yeah.
But going to SLA level
I think we do mention that. What we could do in this paper is to expand on it and come up with the scenarios and attack these two dimensions separately and identify, you know, which combinations actually can benefit from our work. I think in that direction it would be very useful for you, Sajeev, as you construct the scenarios and across these dimensions. It would be useful if you looked at the QClouds paper, looked at what they propose, and if there is something that we could directly use from them, we should just use it. If we are proposing something new, then we should know what the difference is from that paper.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And so coming back to the dynamic allocation, right? Since we don't have yet a model that can be dynamically changed, given a workload that's dynamically changing, in this paper, we need to figure out how to evaluate and first of all evaluate, articulate our contributions and then how to evaluate them, right? And so Sajeev, do you want to talk about that graph that we...
Yeah, the graph I remember was very simple idea is that on the x-axis I was just plotting the time interval and the y-axis...
You mean time itself.
Time itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the y-axis we are plotting the revenue generated across all the VMs.
Mm-hmm.
So at the starting point, let's say zero, we start with a certain revenue, and as the time...
But how do you figure out what that revenue is?
So we based on some random allocation to the individual VMs. And
right.
The
or let's say equal allocation
or
to
equal
all allocation. The
VMs. We actually talked about that. We can start from any point. We can start from random point. We can start from equal division, whatever we like. And then we see that how our revenue is going up and converging at the certain point.
Going up at where, as we run the algorithm.
As each iteration. And plot the revenue at that point and then again another interval plot the revenue at front and we are seeing that at some point it will converge.
Right.
And we are comparing with the optimal resource allocation which is brute force, more time consuming but which is
explores all the possibilities.
Explores all the possibilities.
Right. And that would allow us to evaluate whether our algorithm get stuck in some local maxima or something like that, right?
Is it close to the optimal?
Is it close to the optimal? And I think we also discussed the possibility that our algorithm might get stuck in some local maxima. And in that case, how do we...
I think we had some points there to how to get rid of that local maxima. We evaluated one algorithm.
Right. I mean, and you know, getting out of local maxima is a long standing problem. Right, in a lot of different fields.
Yeah.
So we have to, we don't need to reinvent the wheel here. We just have to go and find out what kind of techniques people can potentially use and
in AI mostly.
Yeah, exactly. And there might be some restrictions to directly using those techniques because we have this issue with controlling the contention itself, right? And how much contention can vary even in a given period of time for our models.
I think one of the questions people ask, why don't you do all at the same time? I think the answer comes to the fact that we cannot measure the contention. Cannot predict the contention.
For arbitrary reallocation.
Exactly. That's why we need those iterative way to get to the
maxima. Right. And if that is true and then we get some maxima, how do we determine, I think that those are the challenges, the second level of challenges for this work. How do we know that that's the best, right? And if we have a way to figure out that it's the best or not, then we need to figure out a way to get to an alternative solution if we are stuck in some loop.
I think two ways to do that. One way to just experimentally evaluate with the optimal solution and see how close we are, or the second and more complicated, which is to prove that our algorithm is close to some algorithmic way.
Right.
That's the harder part.
But algorithm will prove that your model is optimal, but that will not prove whether the application is behaving in an optimal way.
So I think we are sort of assuming an ideal case scenario where the behavior of the application does not change at all. And so when we pick applications to run, we had to ensure that is the case.
And also we are making assumptions.
At the end, because at the end you are using the ANN model to do the iteration, right? You are not changing the configuration, the actual configuration. You are using the ANN model to do the iteration and come up with optimal value. Now my question is, in that optimal value, if you run the original applications, actual value, whether that's optimal, that's the exact value that you're getting.
Saying there is some inaccuracy in the ANN model itself?
Yeah, because of the inaccuracy of the ANN model, there may be some error will be introduced into the iteration. So what is the inaccuracy? Because we have measured the ANN inaccuracy in one iteration only, when you put into the ANN.
Right.
And if you go multiple iterations, the inaccuracy may actually
compounded.
Mm-hmm. It may happen. Or inaccuracy, or it may that because of the algorithm, inaccuracy may not be compounded.
Mm-hmm.
So but we don't know the situation.
Thing is that, Raju.
Yeah.
Can I interrupt for a second?
Sure.
So, I think before we go down this path more, I just want to see, I mean, have we given up on solving 1 and 2 simultaneously and we're trying to solve problem 2 by itself? My feeling is that if we make this assumption of that the application does not change the behavior, then it would be a hard sell in itself. People may not just buy this assumption very well.
Right. I was thinking about that, and there's another way to position it, which is to say that the application does not change over certain periods of time, say, and that its stability is guaranteed to some extent as long as the time window is of small size. Right? And so we could, this kind of work would still apply in that small time window, right? And then...
Oh, but then to go to next time window, some amount of remodeling would be needed.
Yeah. So one way to do that is to just do a complete remodel of the application using only the most recent data points, right? And discarding the older model completely, right? Or we could do it in a more smart way and construct an incremental online update of the model, right? So I see that as a kind of an orthogonal direction to what we are doing here. But at the same time, it's very closely related, right? I mean, these two.
Yeah, problems. The thing is that as soon as you write that assumption in the paper, people are going to say that's not really true, that the behaviors will not change.
Yeah.
Do you think we need to write that assumption, or we can just I'm not saying that the high risk, but I'm saying that because you can rerun the model in next interval.
But
so far,
and we can say that we are focusing on one interval only.
But the fact that we just damage it to create a model, it takes a lot of time. And I think the bottom line, I agree with Jay. So if we can sell this paper without assuming that the workload is static, then we should go that route. If we cannot sell it, then let's just concentrate on the online model. I think that's a decision we need to make. But I think Jay agrees a valid concern.
Then we need to assume that the model is built already for us.
No, we are assuming. If we are assuming the workload is static and the model is.
Then assume that the model is somehow built. Let's say we are using a dynamic model, and we are using this model and reconfiguring on a.
Go along the online route, the model has to be dynamic and updated.
I think the other possibility, I think, which is what Sajib is perhaps referring to, is that we can, let's say, create a synthetic workload from our existing benchmarks, and then this is sort of more interesting benchmark, where the benchmark has, let's say, fixed durations of time, and in each duration of time, we control the load on the to the benchmark, right, and then we model for that duration, create one model. The next duration, we have a different model because we change the load, right? And the model is different and so on. So we could create a sort of a progression of models, and each of them are trained based on only a fixed load, right? And then when we want to evaluate a realistic situation, we could we could use the synthetic combination of workloads where loads change and we have a succession of models, and we go ahead and use those models as and when necessary, but we don't specifically address the question of how do we build those models in an online way.
Then how do you map those synthetic models from synthetic workload to the real world application? How do you know which specific phase of that synthetic model?
Because we already know that. We have an oracle, let's say, that, okay, when we get to this point, I know that the model is changed, and this is the new model. So go and use this. Right? So we could go that other route to address maybe part of your concern, which is that in reality, models are not static, and therefore, you know, for your work to be useful, you have to address the dynamic part.
Mm.
But we leave out the question of constructing the online.
Then you have to be careful.
Another way to look at it is the application is not the dynamic application behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Application behavior is more or less static. More or less static in the sense that a typical application will have the same workload in the morning. Typical application will have the same workload around the evening. Same workload around the night. It follows the curve, but the curve remains more or less same throughout the span of time, like so throughout the five months or 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, we can segment each day that within the 6 a.m. to 12 p.m. this is the workload. Within the 12 p.m. to 12 noon to 4 p.m. this is the workload, and we can model each of them series. Like in a day, probably we'll have 4 or 5 different workload, static workload. And we can model each of them individually, and then we can apply 4 or 5 different configurations on the whole system.
This sounds like a good argument.
Early. Because it doesn't change every day kind of thing.
That's a good point.
So I think what Kaushik just mentioned seems like a reasonable direction if we can show for a few applications if that is true. So we run the application for some time and we say that the overall behavior of the application doesn't change and the demand can change all the time. That is something that we know, that the number of users in the application or the demand can change. But I think that needs to be shown in some form, otherwise it's a big thing to state.
Right. And I mean, of course, we haven't really explored the option of simultaneously addressing both problem 1 and 2 yet.
I really think if we can do it and we have some ideas to explore there, then we should go for it. Because otherwise, solving 2 without 1 is a very hard sell.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, I think it's a harder sell than having 1 already solved, right?
And how difficult one to solve?
I think the reason I said we'll go for 2, I specifically mentioned a couple of things. One was that people are possibly looking at 2, right? People may not be looking at 1. At least that's the sense I get from the papers I read, right? And the other thing is that if we go with 1, I don't have a clear sense for how, let's say, easily successful we are going to be.
Yeah, so I think we can spend time on 1, maybe spend a week or 2. If we don't get any leads, we say that, we don't know how to really handle it, there are no good things to explore, then we can come back to either just 2 or maybe some other approximate form of 1 we should also look at while we are exploring 1 to see can we do it in some limited form or can we just detect it and raise that concern.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Ajay, I agree that in an ideal world we should first solve 1 and then we should solve 2. I'm just concerned about the competition that we are faced with, right? And the other groups who are working on this stuff. Right. But at the same time, I mean, I agree that it would be worth, let's say, spending 1 or 2 weeks on problem 1 as well. And maybe there is a brainwave, and we see problem 1 as much more interesting suddenly. Right? And that can be more rewarding, especially if no one else is looking at one, right? Because then, in some sense, we do not have too much competition to worry about. The reason the reason I suggested two was because I sort of assumed that we have competition and we have to sort of race to the finish line first.
Yeah, but I think it won't make a difference. We'll be at the finish line with a paper that's not going to go in.
I see. So even with the assumption that Kaushik brought up, you still think it's unrealistic for it to get in, or I mean, if we
With that assumption, if we can show that assumption for maybe some applications, that may be okay. The question is how many people would really agree with the assumption, and would they be able to quote simple examples saying, "Oh, this is not really true." I mean, one way to test it is we have Ruby's benchmark. Let's run Ruby's with very different configurations of browsing and the login and other things.
But
and see if you run different configurations, how much the model changes.
I think what Kaushik was mentioning is slightly different.
Yeah.
I think you were saying in real applications, there is a periodic cycle, a daily cycle of activity that during certain periods of time you always see the same load, and that load can change over the day, and in different periods of the day you can have different loads. So if we, let's say, construct four models and use each model for a different time of the day, then I guess that's what you were suggesting, right?
Oh, so you're saying if there are four different types of access patterns, you create model for all four. We know these models for each application.
It's not access pattern only. Let me try to clarify. What I was trying, from where I was coming, is that the number of users on, say for example, the CageCut application, a CageCut site, really, limits changes over a day. Okay. So if you think about that, that's a graph or number of users of a CageCut application for today. And if you take the graph for two model, the graph for today and the graph for two model remains more or less same, really.
Okay, so I think number of users somebody can buy, saying that, I mean, this that is talking about the load of the application.
Number of users determines the number of load, right?
Yeah. But how do you guard against the scenario where the workload changes? For example, if you are hosting a website, the kind of things people are doing can change over the day.
Yeah. And that's where the online model.
The question is how dynamic that is. Do you change the way you interact with your banking application every day?
No, I think it's not that I change. It's basically a group phenomena that if that thing changes during the day, because it may not stay stagnant. It's like on weekends people interact with Amazon in a different way than on a weekday. On a weekday I'll go there and I'll buy something. On a weekend I might browse for a long time before buying anything.
Absolutely. But my point is there is a finite number of profiles that the website sees. It's not infinite. So can we address that for dynamic, because there is two ways of addressing a dynamic problem. One is you can take the dynamic problem as a stochastic problem kind of thing. It's always varying kind of thing. Really. Another way to look at the dynamic problem is a multiple instances of multiple static problem. I was thinking that can we address the dynamic problem? We take the consideration of the dynamic problem, but try to solve that as the multiple instances of the static problem. Is it possible? I'm just giving a suggestion. That's all. Really.
I think for some applications, it's possible. Taking Ruby as an example, the percentage of reading requests versus browsing requests directly affect the resource. Usage of the application. So, for instance, the reading mix is basically 50% reading requests, and problem mix is 100%, it's a problem bunch.
Mm-hmm.
So if I say from 0 to 10 is one model, 10 to 20 is another model, then I only need 10 models for Ruby. I think that is doable, but how efficient that I don't know. Can you remind me what are the challenges?
Even if you have only 10 models,
right,
for you to know which model it is at this current given time is not straightforward. Right? Which of those 10 models should I be using?
Because it's
not that it's going first model 1 and then model 2 happens and then model 3 happens. No, it can be random, right? So
it can be, yes.
So to know which model to use right now is much harder. I think what Kaushik was saying earlier is easier because I know what time of the day it is.
So
I know which model I need to use.
What we have been doing is we draw a proxy before the web here, so we know the percentage of the composition of the refunds.
Mm-hmm.
And for online to happen, some kind of knowledge is necessary. But again, I would question, so what are the challenges to make the our current
is how the reconfiguration is the problem is the is the evaluation because each time we create a model, we evaluate a lot of possible combinations.
Can we just pick one, the best one?
No, because the thing is that each time you create a model, you build a model based on some combinations of resources. So now you, let's say, in 10 minutes, you're switching to another model. Now you cannot build the model by training all those data points, all those combinations of resources. So that was the main challenge. If we can address the situation where we can say that even by looking at 2-3 more extra points, we can build a new model, then we can address this. But otherwise, if we start from scratch, it's a really hard problem.
Okay, folks, I actually have another meeting at 10, and I have to leave, but we can either discuss it again, or if you guys reach some consensus, just let me know.
Okay. That's fine, Ajay. I think what we're going to do is to still maybe have a discussion next week as well. Maybe part of next week's meeting we could discuss this number.
But before that, I want to write those scenarios down.
Yeah, please do, because that is an independent task anyway. We should pursue that aggressively, right? Because we have a better handle on that one.
Yeah, and I also suggest give a thought on the how complex the dynamic model is. Really. If it is just a tweak of the existing thing. Really.
I don't see it as a simple tweak. I mean, I've given it some thought, probably not a whole lot, but I don't see an obvious tweak that will help to address this, especially if accuracy is the primary concern for that new model, right, that you're switching into.
Okay, I was thinking, can't you just dynamic to like a window kind of, the moving window kind of thing, can you do that?
Possibly, but then how do you create the configuration for that next window in the chart?
So I think to go the online route, what we can do is that because we are moving on a dynamic window, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we know that at this point, how the VMs are, what are the type of resources it has. So what we can do is that just recreating the model, I mean, because we are also collecting the actual data as we move forward.
Sure.
So we can see that our predicted and the actual, how different is it. Let's say we build a threshold. Let's say if it's more than 15%, we say we need to build a model.
Okay.
But at the same time, we know that what resources at those VMs are, and we know that our dynamic reconfigurator will only change by 5% or 10%. So we just need to come up with the performance of the application within those 3 or 4 allocation values, not like complex.
That's one way. Other way to look at this thing is the application is not dynamic, because think of in this way, that whenever you are allocating resources to the application, you have to predict that how much the application throughput, how much the application load will be.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, you cannot do anything. And on what basis you predict? You basically predict on the basis of the historical data. Really, everyone does that. There is tons of literature, there is tons of citation, and I've seen them doing that actually. They take the log of the web log early, and they basically draw the curve. Okay, what is the user of, what is the, how many users this time, how many users this time, how many users this time. Really, based on that, they try to predict, okay, how many users will be on tomorrow, or how many users will be on the next day, really. So we can use the same thing, because the number of prediction is if we know the number of users, then we can always run the rerun the model.
I think that if to play devil's advocate, earlier it might have been more realistic to do something like that. But if you're talking about a cloud where the situation is very dynamic and the applications that are going into the cloud are themselves so dynamic, their load keeps changing on a day-by-day basis or much more rapidly, can we afford to make that sort of assumption in that kind of
scenario? I don't see that that is going away even in the next 10 years because there is no way to predict the future, really. How many users will be in my site in tomorrow without using the historical data.
Right. But if we look at most recent observation, right, if you look at the current time, and let's say that the current time is an indicator of the future, and in the current time, what I see is very different than what I saw yesterday.
Not necessarily. I'll give an example. Take the example of the CNN.com.
Hmm.
Current time, nothing has happened. Suddenly, two world towers went down. What will happen? There is a spike on the CNN.com. How can I predict that? There is no way you can predict that.
You cannot, but you can observe it. So what I'm saying is that when there is a traffic surge or when there is a change, if you observe it at the beginning of the change, and then let's say that you make an assumption that the change is going to last at least for a certain period of time, then you can possibly react much quickly. Then if you were to say, okay, at 2 p.m., it's going to be the same as 2 p.m. yesterday, although at 1 p.m. I see that things are very different than yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we could possibly do something about that 2 p.m. Being different today than yesterday.
Typically, that what they do is, they say, for example, like a Pro Flowers, because I walked to the Pro Flowers before earlier, and what the Pro Flowers do is, Pro Flowers are going to, they size the resources on the mother's day based on what happened in the previous mother's day.
Right.
And some, how much growth they saw in the last Xmas. So say for example, the Xmas in the 2009 Xmas, compared to 2010 Xmas, they saw 20% growth.
Mm.
So from 2010 mother's day to 2011 mother's day, they have a market, let's do like a 12% growth.
Mm.
Because they don't, there is no way to know the what is how much data, how much user will come on the mother's day. Without the only data is the historical data. That's what they do.
But
and the pattern that I was looking for, I will give us an interesting pattern. Like if you look at the typical job sites, get peak in the noon. Okay, that's a typical pattern. The credit card application gets peak in the evening. That's a typical pattern, and that's the way. That's the they follow. Basically, they create the curve, really, and curve for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Sunday. Each curve is different, really, and they create the curve and they follow the curve to allocate the how many resources it will be. Really.
I think that if we don't have a good handle on the online, then we should go with that kind of an assumption and assume a certain model that exists for a certain period of day or a certain day of the
week. I don't know how to possibly make it too dynamic.
I think one...
How quickly you can react.
Yeah, how quickly can you react? I think that's really challenging. And I think Sajib had some idea about, okay, let's make the current observation to change the model. Use the current observations to change the model and things like that. And then there are questions of stability...
I think you have to take the acceleration in that case, not the current value.
Hmm.
Acceleration means number of users now versus number of users 2 minutes back versus number of users half an hour back. If I see that my number of users are growing like that, I have to create a model that is based on that growth graph.
Hmm.
Something like that. Yeah.
Excellent. Anyway, Sajib, you have a lot to think about.
It's a complex model.
Think about the online and write about the scenarios and the models compared with the Qflows world.
Okay. Yeah, I would recommend you to read that paper carefully. So the paper also addresses revenue maximization problem.
Mm-hmm.
So what no matter whether we have an online model or not, how can we differentiate what we are doing into that paper? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because that paper is using the model predictive control approach, and study shows the direction going now.
Mm.
So I've tried two different ways to online modeling and online optimization. I think a lot of times the existing work that does that is assuming the model is not perfect. So what we have been doing in your work is that we try to put the perfect model first, and use that perfect model as the oracle, right?
Yeah.
So when you go online, you sort of have to deal with the knowledge that you have, the data you have already observed. So the model is never perfect. That's why you have to update it to make it as perfect as possible. So that may address your concern. If I cannot vary the user configuration to get a perfect model, then just create a model based on what you have already observed. But still, I don't want to constrain your ideas to what I have already tried. So maybe we'll come up with a new approach.
Yeah.
But we have to contrast that new approach to MPC, model building central. Okay. MPC has been widely used.
Model
creating control. Almost all those HP papers we have referenced, many of them are based on model
creating
control.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there they address the online version of the problem?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's online and also address the optimization problem. Mm-hmm. And also, QCloud is a pretty good example. It also considers the contention, non-particular number of resources. How are we
going to
be different than that as well?
Okay, so that's good. So next week we can meet on Tuesday.
Okay.
Instead of Monday, if that works for anyone.
What time?
This time is fine with me, or we could also do 3 to 4 p.m. That also works.
That'd be fine.
What
Let me check
my pen.
Maybe
3
to
3.
Okay.
3 to 4 p.m. works?
3 to 4, yes.
Okay, so send out that email for Tuesday next week.
Okay.
In the meanwhile, if you have something written up, do pass it along.
I'll slowly start writing the scenarios.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Kashik.
You know, when will the evening you have to come?
Did you see that email?
I just saw it. But will he come in the fall?
In the fall, yeah.
In the fall?
Yeah.
But that time, Fishing told me he might have missed deadline for that 10 years. And that's not a issue, practical issue.
Yeah, we've done that before.
Okay.
Not a big deal.
Okay.
And Alma is not coming.
Yeah, so that's
a shoot.
Yeah. So I'll say it's kind of bad.
Not good.
No. Okay, so good is bad news, man.
What?
Good is bad news.
Good news and bad news, yeah. So we have Iyengar. I don't know. Well, I got a message from Divi Agarwal, and he said that that's not good. I don't know what happened here. Anyway, you'll see.
Okay. I guess maybe you like the Divi better than I do.
Oh, absolutely. And I think he's much more dynamic and energetic.
I see.
But we'll see. Maybe this guy is good too.
Yeah, I don't know Divi that well, because from Iyengar's background, I see he has good connections with the Decision Labs and some other agencies. That might help.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Particularly for us in systems.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's good. Okay.
I mean, if he can do the same thing here, then what he did at the NSU, that'd be great. And it's
put
our ranking
in
our country.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess she's more at the airport, right?
Are we going in the same flight?
I think it's 4 p.m.
Yeah, 5 p.m. 4:55.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so great.
We can share a cab with them.
Share a cab there. Yeah. Well, actually, I do get a free ride by the conference. So, yeah, certainly we can go together.
Okay, great. Fantastic.
Yes. Okay. You're staying at the Brown Palace?
I think I chose the cheaper one. No, the quality inn. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Is it nearby?
Nearby.
Okay.
Just drive next to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cheap.
Yeah. All right. See you.